I'm Nick Harcourt, and we've got Dora Jahr here. How are you?
Hey, how are you?
I'm good. Thank you so much for coming and playing for us.
You're welcome. It's fun to do.
I know that you just came off tour, and
yes.
You were telling me, before we get into anything, about the drive you had to do from Minneapolis to Seattle, and you told me it took 3 days?
Yeah, 3 days of icy, shaky.
Right.
You know, we're going like 30 miles an hour because it's so slippery, and we see like 10 semi-trucks on the side of the road in the snow, so.
It gets really scary when that's going on.
Very intense.
I remember driving across the country many years ago when I was a younger guy, and I was in a van, and everything was stopped. They were just like, you've got to stop. You can't drive in this.
Yeah. I was surprised it wasn't because it was so slippery and you could just hear the wind howling, and we're in this like sprinter van. So it's like a sailboat. You're just like catching all the wind.
So you've had a pretty busy year, right?
Yeah, I think it's been busy. Yes.
And the touring, I mean, you've been to Europe, you've been across the country. You just wrapped up, you told me, here in Los Angeles at the Troubadour.
Yes.
About a week ago.
Yeah.
What's your takeaway at the end of the year?
Wow. Well, it's my first year ever of performing live.
Mm.
My first live show was September 2021. So
just a little over a year ago.
A year and 2 months of
right.
playing live. And I've learned so much and gotten so close to my band and the people I play with. And it just feels like the natural reason why we do music is to play it for people in a room and express and
right.
connect. So.
So before you started playing out live, mm-hmm. I mean, obviously you were getting ready for that and you were working away at home. Tell us.
Sort of, but I was also like, how can I avoid playing live ever and just be a recording artist? Because I couldn't even like
You didn't
imagine.
Like the idea of that?
It terrified me.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then now it's become the reason and what I think about when I'm writing a song is like, is this going to feel like, can I move around with this and can I play guitar on this one? Or because sometimes I won't play guitar and I'll just jump around and then.
Right.
Yeah. So I'm thinking about the live show all the time now.
So if you think about that first live show in September 2021 and then you think about this, where was that, by the way?
That was in London at the Waiting Room in Stoke Newington.
So your first gig was in London. That's
yes.
pretty cool.
Yeah.
And then you wrapped up this year right here in Los Angeles mm-hmm. at the Troubadour, as we mentioned. I think I started off that by saying, what's your takeaway from the year? If you think about
yeah.
where you were a year ago to where you are now and all the touring that you've done
yeah.
in between.
My takeaway from the year. I think a big takeaway is what my intention is when I perform live. I think I used to think it was about like connecting to people, and it is, but even more so now I'm realizing it's about expressing in the moment what is the meaning of the song. And the meaning of every song changes every show. And if I just think about the expression of it, I think that's how it can feel new every day. And it never gets boring. So expression, and then the connection comes after that.
You've had a couple of EPs out, right?
Yes.
I'm presuming you need more than a couple of EPs to play a live set.
Well, my show's an hour.
Right.
Yeah.
So that's more than a couple of EPs now? Or do you?
I'm playing all. My first EP is really long. It's 7 songs.
Oh.
So that's Digital Meadow.
Right.
And then Comfortably in Pain is 6 songs.
Right. So that's a set.
Yeah. And then I have 2 other songs or 3 other songs. Yeah, 3 other songs.
I was going to ask what else you sort of pepper in there. Do you do any covers?
No, not this tour. I didn't do a cover this tour.
Right.
I have a few that I want to do in the future.
Like?
Pets by Porno for Pyros.
Oh, I love that song.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
There's something so hypnotic about that metronome
dun,
drum.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah, and just the lyrics are so funny to me and also very scary because he's talking about when Martians come and take over for us, we'll make great pets, which is, you know, have you seen the movie Fantastic Planet? This French animation?
I don't think so, no.
It's all about these blue aliens who like are huge and the humans are this big and
right.
and they take them as kind of play toys for their kids, but they're just like tortured.
So we're like little Tamagotchis for aliens.
Yeah. But that song is so good, and I want to cover that one day.
Yeah. Talking about lyrics, tell me a little bit about how you write and where you write from.
Oh, that's a good question. I think I'm figuring it out again, as if like I've forgotten how to write, but I'm re-remembering. It always starts with melody and guitar, and then lyrics are kind of happening alongside, but not as like I'm fitting this to the song, but it's more like what ideas am I thinking about now, and what kind of fantasy world is inside wanting to come out, and then I'll sort of like collage them together over time.
Who did you listen to when you were first getting into music? Who inspired you?
Foo Fighters was like my first live show ever, and that was 4. And
wow.
It was part of a benefit concert for the Bridge School, which was started by Peggy Young,
yep.
Neil Young's late wife. And my sister went to that school because she had cerebral palsy.
Got it.
And so we would go to this big weekend, and it was like a lineup of legends for Saturday and Sunday. And so I was 4 and my sister was 6, and we're sitting like on stage with the artists, and then there's like a giant audience out there, but we're behind Taylor Hawkins mm-hmm. playing drums, mm-hmm. and like his drumsticks are splintering, like, and I'm like catching the wood, and it's raining, and they play Everlong, and it's acoustic because I guess everyone did it unplugged
because they were worried about
I don't know.
Electricity shocks?
I think it was just like the whole vibe of the benefit concert was they wanted to keep it like raw. And so
sort of stripped down.
Yeah, I think everyone played acoustic guitars. Right. And that was the moment where I was like, I need to figure out first how I'm going to be able to play guitar.
Right.
And then how I can be Dave Grohl.
Yeah, yeah.
Because like, I can't explain.
The feeling. I mean, obviously, I don't remember being 4, but I'm sort of.
That's the only memory I have from being 4.
I'm trying to think about, you know, what kind of impression that would have on a regular 4-year-old, and that might not be the one that you had.
Well, that's an interesting point because my mom did mention to me recently. She was like, you know, there was a lot of siblings of kids at that concert, and
right.
you're the. Like one of the only ones who became a musician.
Yeah, they're all lawyers now or something.
Yeah, something. Yeah. Like I think one girl is a physical therapist. And like everyone kind of, you know, branched
right.
out. And
can you remember that feeling?
Yes. I think it's the same feeling and it's reiterating over time. But like it's the feeling of expansion and like, oh, something's possible. And this is important. And there's like words being said without words. And that was like a big thing with my relationship with my sister. She couldn't walk or talk, but we had a very in-depth language together that was like our facial expressions and just the energy. And so I think music really, in that moment, I was like, oh yeah, this is what's always happening. Like we're singing a song together and like our spirits are like, blah, blah, blah. And there's just more happening than we realize.
Can you do that again? Thank you.
Yes.
I just want to make sure we got it on the camera.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic.
You're welcome.
So maybe it had something to do with the connection with your sister as well, do you think?
I think just like we were both there together, like feeling this for the first time. And after that moment, it was like Foo Fighters in the car all the time. Foo Fighters, the Beatles, and then also some musicals like Into the Woods and Pacific Overtures by Stephen Sondheim.
Mm-hmm.
So those are like the musical influences in the very beginning.
Were you a theater kid as well? Did you do that stuff?
Yeah, I did in middle school and high school. I did musical theater.
So that would have been your first performance, I'm guessing, right?
Yes. That is like where I kind of, when I was coming to terms with the fact that I would have to play my music in front of people, I was like, okay, well, I've done it, like singing other people's songs and playing a character. And then naturally this character comes out on stage that I know intimately, but is not like who I am in real life.
Right, so Dora Jar is you, but it's also a character, right? I mean, do you see her, do you see a different person?
I feel more brave when I'm on stage.
Right.
I think naturally because I'm doing something that scares me, but also like, I'm like, well, fuck it. Okay, let's just like, there's something very unplanned about it and spontaneous and the just based on who's in the room and how it feels and like what my guitar player Isaac's doing or what Jesse's doing on the bass or Destin on the drums, and I'm like looking at them and then I keep it moving, you know? And it's just always making new choices. And so, yeah, it's somebody else, but it's also me.
So when did you actually start playing guitar? Did you ask for one? Was it given to you?
Yeah, my mom and I talked about it. I was like, I think I need to do this now. And I think I was 13.
Right.
And before that, I was just kind of, I would record myself on my mom's little voice recorder.
Mm-hmm. Like those old mini cassette kind of things?
Yes.
Yeah.
So I think she still has cassette tapes of my
those
tiny little,
tapes
little
with
person
you singing.
Voice. Yeah. And so those exist. And then
it's for the box set.
Yeah. I actually really want to find them and yeah. like mess them up and
yeah. drop them into some songs.
Exactly.
Fuck them up.
Exactly. Yeah. There's probably some inspiration in there.
Yeah.
There always is in your childhood self. That's like the biggest force of, you know, rediscovery.
When I lived in Australia many years ago, before, you know, cell phones and internet and stuff,
yeah.
me and my mom used to trade tapes. She was in England, I was in Australia. Mm. And we would trade these tapes. And I found one a couple of years ago, and I'm still scared to listen to it because I know what my headspace was when I recorded.
Like, so you'd, like, send each other messages on tapes and then send them?
Yeah, we'd record, like, a 20-minute conversation. I'd be driving, and I'd just be talking to myself, hey, Mom, so I'm on my way to work or whatever.
That's
and I
amazing.
Went to do this or whatever. And she would get it, and then she would send another one back, and we did that for years.
That's so cool.
Yeah.
Did a lot of people do that?
I don't know, but there's gold in those tapes for sure.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. That's like a journal.
Yeah, exactly.
Wow. And it also reminds me of Twin Peaks. Like.
Oh, now you're talking. Yeah.
Jerry
I'm hungry now.
You need to watch that show again.
Oh, my God. You know, I'd never watched that when it was on first. Mm. I was too busy. I mean, I was busy when I was 30. But I watched them all right before the reboot or the new ones. So
yeah.
I watched them all back to back in a couple of months.
Whoa.
Series 2, you could live without. But the first one.
I agree.
And yeah, anyway, amazing. So you were on tour with Billie Eilish this year.
Yes.
Tell me a little bit about that. How did it come about? And what were those shows like?
Yeah, well, I mean, first of all, Billie, I feel like she changed my life even before I met her. Just who she is as an artist
right.
and how she's evolved. And that was a really important moment for me. It was like 2017 when I first heard her and I was like, oh, wow, this person is expressive and free and not afraid to say things the way only she would say it. And I think we all have that potential to speak things that only I would say, only you would say. And then a lot of us kind of conform after a certain point, I guess.
Sure.
And she just had this freedom about her. And so when I was like, how am I going to make music and put it out in the world? And like, do I have to like fit in this certain thing? And then she came about and I was like, oh no, I can just be who I am and write the songs that I write and then just trust that it'll work out. So she's always been really important to me. And also my mom was in a play with her dad in like the 70s, I think. So like my mom like knew her parents. But I didn't know her until last summer. Not this past summer, but a year and a bit ago.
2021. Yeah.
And my EP had just come out and someone showed it to Billie and then Billie reached out and just said she loved it. And
wow.
I was like, I remember getting the messages and I was like, oh, this is definitely like, it's gotta be like a fan account with like her exact name and picture, but it was her. And
did she hit you up on Twitter or something? Or
it was an Instagram
yeah.
message. And yeah, it was just like.
I can't imagine what you must have thought. Well, you just told me you thought it was
a fan camp, it was like this.
But once you realized it wasn't.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me was like, oh my God, she listens to music. I mean, obviously, but like she really cares about music and people, and she's so genuine. So
I think the greatest gift that she's given to young songwriters, female songwriters in particular, is exactly what you were just saying, which is like, just be you.
Yeah. And don't even try to define who you are. Like, that's part of
Yeah, why do you have to explain it?
Yeah. And there's a lot of like, oh, I have to like make these decisions and like be very like clear about what I am. And it's like, you can be very nuanced and complicated and hypocritical at times, like, because you're a human. But that's kind of part of the dance of life. You're like, yes, no, here, like, just exist.
What about the shows? What about performing and opening for her?
Crazy. Well, so when I first was asked to open, it was kind of a short notice thing, and I was like, all right, let's go. Let's get the band together. Here we go. We flew to New Orleans, and all of a sudden I was like, I feel really sick, and then I had COVID. So I like missed all the shows that I was going to do, and that was going to be 4 shows, New Orleans and Charlotte and whatever. But then after I recovered, they were like, oh, wait, come and do 7 shows. So
it worked out for you.
It worked out. It was so weird because it was all of a sudden I'm going to do these huge shows, and then all of a sudden I'm not going to do them. So I had to let go of it, and then just came back even more. And the first show was really trippy because it's so big.
How many people are you playing to?
Well, it's an arena of like so many thousands. Like
40,000 or something?
No, that's 20,000. Like stadium. I think like...
Sheds?
Yeah, it's like 15,000 to 20,000.
Okay. That's a lot of people.
Which is so much. But I'm on at like 7:30, so it's probably like 50 to 70% full when I go on.
Still a lot of people, though.
Exactly. And then by the end, it's like almost full because, you know.
They're getting, everybody's coming in.
They gotta
but
be ready.
I'm
yeah.
also imagining that people are outside and they're like, what is going on in there? Who's this girl? And people start coming
Dude,
in.
Dude, I mean, yeah, I couldn't think about like what was going on.
You were just playing and hoping you got to the end
I
of it.
I was just yeah. like, I would think about this Rick and Morty episode where they are playing at like a big festival and Rick tells Morty to not be nervous because the audience is just ones and zeros, which is not what I ever want to think, but like that was the only thing that calmed me down. But another thing is like, some audience would be very vocal and like cheering, and even though most of them didn't know who I was, like they were so supportive, and I think it's because like Billie fans are the best fans you could possibly play for.
Right, and she picked you to play, so it's not like they're gonna give her pick a hard
yeah.
time, right?
Yeah.
But as you mentioned, that you know her fans are you know a particular type of music fan.
I guess, open-minded.
Yeah.
Like I think that's just the biggest thing about that world of Billie fans. But
so, what'd you learn from those shows?
I learned a lot of many different things. I think I probably just learned how to relax. And that's probably where I had the expression epiphany. It's not about like, can I feel these people right now? It's like, can I give what I just naturally give and not be afraid to give it in whatever way I will today. And accepting whatever mood I had that day and letting that come out in the show. And it's a lot of just going with the flow and like also being really, you know, we get like a short sound check. We don't get to like perfect everything because it takes so long to build her stage. And like, I'm not like expecting like an hour long sound check, but we have to just, you know, take what we can get and then give what we give.
More
and it was amazing.
More than a line check though, right? You got more than...
Sometimes just a line check, but that's fine because this is what we do.
Yeah. And you're opening for probably the biggest female star or one of them in the world.
Yeah.
When I asked, what did you learn from that? I was sort of thinking about what did you take from that you now have in your live show?
Okay, yeah. Movement, because the stages are so big and I was like, well, I can't just stand in one place. I have to like go and I'd, you know, go to the edge of the stage and see like these couple hundred people here and then go to this edge. Right. And then you look out to like the furthest cell phone light that you can see and then...
Half a mile away.
Yeah, you're just like, what is going on? But I think I learned from that experience how to make my own headline show, which is in much smaller venues, like, I don't know, what was the Troubadour, like 500? But I make it feel as big as I want to and as small and intimate as I want to.
Right, so you've learned how to be able to do some, well, you were already used to small rooms.
Yes.
But how to be able to sort of upsize, downsize,
yeah, that expand, kind of thing. Like use my body in motion to like make the walls go far away and then bring them really close.
Have you been writing new material this year?
Yes, I'm always writing, but it's like finishing has been difficult this year, but I'm writing an album, so that's what's happening.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, so what's next? You just finished up this tour, as you mentioned, in LA a week ago at the time of us recording this.
Yes.
Are you done with live work for the year?
For the year, yeah. Well, the year's almost over.
It is, you're right.
Weird.
Yeah. This is December 9th, 10th? What day is it today? As we're recording this.
Yeah.
Did you get a little bit of a break, or are you in the studio? What's next?
I've been recording this whole week, and Christmas, I'm going to chill out a little bit. And then I'm going to go to Poland, and that's where my dad's side of the family is from.
Oh, right on.
And I'm just going to be there writing alone.
Right.
And I think that's where, like, everything has to start is me and my solitude. And it's something that has been kind of hard to demand this year with all the busy things that go on and, like, you spend so much time writing and then you have to like promote it. And that's so unnatural for me because I'm like, I just want to write more.
Just want to be a musician.
But then you like have to kind of step out of that and be like, you make videos and you do interviews and you show up here and there and that's all fun. But it really like breaks the focus apart.
Sure.
So back into solitude in Poland in the freezingest months of winter.
How long are you going to be there?
I'll be there January and February.
Oh, wow. That's a good chunk of time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so we've had this very light conversation. Now I want to get serious.
Oh, yeah.
Dreams.
Dreams.
You were telling me that you've been having some strange dreams.
Yeah, it usually happens like once every 2 months I'll have a week of very vivid, very strange dreams. And there's been like two notable ones. And the first one was just like really cool, and I wish it was real because I was in this big house that was very familiar, but I've never seen it in real life before. And I really knew my way around. And the way you would get from one room to the other was you jump through this black square on the ground that had like a border. And I remember there was a checker border and like a purple sparkly border. And you jump through the square, and my body would just like poof into like gold flecks, and I would come up through a different black square in a different room in the house.
Wow.
And
but would you, the gold flecks would reassemble into
It kind of like in Willy Wonka when Mike TV is being, you know, turned into like the million little pieces to show up on the TV screen.
Uh-huh.
And they have that big machine that like changes the size of the being.
What happened when you were reconstituted at the other end of your...
You'd be upside down in the room that was like... So you'd go down and then you'd come up the other end, like, flipped over.
Oh, it's like Stranger Things. You're like in the upside down kind of thing.
It was kind of like the upside down, but it was still like a nice place to be. It wasn't like a nightmare. Yeah. So that was interesting, and it kind of reminded me also of an Escher painting where like nothing made sense spatially, but it worked in the dream, and I wish I could recreate it in real life. But then this one nightmare was it was just like during tour, and I had I guess you could call it a, what do you call it, stress dream about performance
anxiety.
And I had to go on stage, and I was in this tiny magenta bikini that covered nothing. And my band was like, yeah, come on, we're ready to go. And I'm like trying to, I was like, are you sure? Like, am I okay? I have no other clothes, I guess. So I went on stage and the only person in the audience was Post Malone. And I was like really happy to see him because I really like Post Malone.
Sure.
But when he smiled, like his whole face started dripping.
Wow.
And like it looked really like, it was really scary. And I went up to him and I said, Posty, like I would love to do the show for you right now, but I think I just have to put on a different outfit. So just hang tight. So I went back into this like backstage area and I opened this door and a lot of things happened. I can't say them here, but then I try to wake myself up because I realized it was a nightmare. And I'm looking up and there's like 12 TV screens playing cartoons at the same time. And I'm like moving through them like I'm translucent. And then I wake up and it was very scary.
Interesting.
Yeah.
If you could teleport yourself anywhere right now, where would you go?
In the world?
Universe.
In the universe?
Yeah. I mean, if you're going to have a superpower, you might as well have it for the whole universe.
I know. I would go to where Mary Poppins took kids, Jane and Michael, in the chalk drawing when they are on the, what is it called, a carousel?
Yeah.
And they're in that like chalk drawing.
You go there?
Yeah, I'd go there.
That sounds like fun.
Because I really want to eat those candied apples that you see. And they're going, I'm the little lum de lie, I'm the little lum de lie. I'm seeing supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
And Dick Van Dyke.
Yeah,
supercalifragilisticexpialidocious. Even the sound of it.
It's something quite atrocious.
Yeah. Good dreams.
Yes, to come.
Yeah. Well, it's been great meeting you.
You too.
Thanks for coming and playing for us.
Thank you for having me.
And I can't wait to see what you do next.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Up this sleeve, you're already over me. So I'll become a bumblebee. Pollinate the stadium, oh flower gun, blow me away. Ultraviolet tank array. I'm in love with everyone. I don't need your king, dumb, 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 dumb. Stupid, overjoyed, undercover. I'm destroyed by my baby because he does.
Thank you.
party. I cut you twice, feeling naughty, with a dash of spice. It's been a long a day. I think about you 25 hours a day. Until the fire spreads into the sky, and will our time expire? Will it fade into goodbye? And when did you love me most? And how come I couldn't tell? Now you are a lonely ghost, and I'm your silent bell. I saw your memory washed up on the sand. I let it stick to my skin, traced it with my hand. Standing at the shore, I can't see you anymore, but I won't look back. Won't look back. No, I won't. Path, and then I wound up at your door. I drowned in a bath and woke up on the ocean floor. But I didn't need any saving, I was craving a brave thing. And I don't think I need you anymore. But even that's a scary thought to explore. 'Cause I think I saw your memory washed up on the sand. I let it stick to my skin, traced it with my hand. And I can't see you anymore, but I won't look.
The SoCal Sound Sessions are produced by 88.5 The SoCal Sound. Session hosted by Nick Harcourt. Audio recorded and mixed by Tristan Dolce. Edited by Matt Blake. The SoCal Sound is a public service of California State University Northridge and Saddleback College. Streaming on the web at thesocalsound.org.